On a smooth Lord have mercy Tuesday evening, how's everyone doing? It's the Teddy Bear. Welcome to Night Tracks Radio. And today's artist spotlight, gifted singer, songwriter, and producer to his credit, the legendary bassist from Prince and the Revolution, my man, the one and only Brown Mark. Brother, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. It is an honor to have you on the show. So much to talk about. First of all, I have a bone to pick with you, man. I've been waiting for a Maserati album for a long time. What is going
on? You know, I've been trying to put those together, but I can't get it released for one thing. I don't own the masters, so... I wanted to re-release some of the old stuff with some new stuff, but second problem I ran into was just getting the guys together, man. It's just, you know, a lot of stuff going on there. So it was easier for me to just leave it alone for a while.
I said, cool, man. It's like we got the first album. I'm like, okay, waiting is five, then 10 years has passed by. And then I see periodically, I see you on the different, as far as on doing videos and everything, and people asking questions about, man, because that first album was something else. You did a fantastic job on that
thank
album,
you,
man.
Thank you.
Oh my you. Pleasure. I wanted to ask you, not just being a very gifted musician and songwriter, what gives you more pride, working behind the scenes or actually performing now?
That's a good question. You're the first person that's ever asked me that, and I like that. I like working behind the scenes. A lot of people think that the solo career, that was like my first love. No. You know, when I played with Prince, I stayed with him so long because I didn't have that desire to do my own thing. That's why I put Maserati together, so I could kind of live vicariously through them and build them up to be what I would have been had I, you know, left Prince after the first year. So as I started getting into producing, I got signed to Motown. And, you know, they really pushed that solo artist thing on me. That's not what I wanted. I wanted to stay in producing. So, unfortunately.
Because I've always looked at you as a very creative person. I'm going all the way back to the Controversy days. Being creative as far as being a songwriter. And it's interesting you said about as far as staying with Prince that length of time, working behind the scenes, because I know with Prince, he looked at the time as his alter ego. And then when I look at you, I look at Maserati as your as almost
exactly.
your alter ego, and you were able to pour so much into that group. And I'm saying right now, here we are in 2022, and God, New Year's right around the corner. What are some of the plans that you set aside for yourself as far as working with other artists or collaborating or doing some songwriting for other artists?
Well, you know, as you probably know, the industry is so different now. It's a different playing field, and everybody's a producer. Everybody got a home studio. Everybody's a recording artist. Everybody's a producer. So it's really hard to break through. I found it's hard to break through the egos that start to develop in one's mind once they learn that, oh, I can put some tracks together. They'll realize that it's way more to it than that. There's a whole theory behind it. There's a whole psychological aspect, marketing, and there's so many different aspects to it. So the trouble that I've run into working with artists, newer artists, is that, you know, they don't feel they need anybody. They got all the answers. So hopefully in 2023, you know, I got a lot of stuff in the fire. I'm just hoping that I'll be able to push through and re-enter the industry the way that I want to. And that is, I'm going to release a Brown Mark Nation album with me and my guys. it used to be the Bad Boys of Paisley, which was a, or, you know, kind of a bleed off of Maserati. So we're gonna put a record out probably by summer. And then I have some other things that I'm doing as well. As far as working with other artists, though, hey, send me your demos. I'd be more than happy to work with anybody. But I just don't want no drama. You know, if you want to work, let's work. But
right, you know, I understand that.
Type of drama. Yeah.
The vibe that I've always got from you, I may be wrong, won't be the first, and definitely will not be the last. You're very meticulous in your work. Business is business, work is work. The craftsmanship of putting something together is like a newborn baby. This is your baby. You're putting all the love and emphasis on doing that, and I see a lot of artists today, they don't take that same approach, and I got to ask you, being someone that is a perfectionist and who is meticulous, how does that make you feel? To just like, you know what, I'm cool in my own lane, just staying and doing me instead of just trying to waste my time, work, as you said, working with a lot of people that have overblown egos and really don't understand the concept of what it takes to be a musician.
Well, you know, I always look back on history for everything. History always tells a story. History always repeats itself, just with different people.
Right.
And one of the things that I've learned in history is, let's take one example, Picasso. You didn't know who he was until he was dead.
Right.
But the you think he cared? He did what he did because that's what he loved.
Right.
That's where his heart was. It took me a long time to learn that, but once I locked into it, I didn't care. I don't care about the money. I don't care about the fame, the fortune, all the jet set, the limelight, the bling bling. I don't care about none of that. The only thing I care about is my family, my girl, my home, my kids. You know, I have my circle. That's right. All I care about is making them happy. And as long as we're happy, people can hate my music. I wouldn't care. I'm going to still put it out and have fun with it. So,
at the end of the day, that's all that matters. Is how can you, you had an opportunity to travel around this world where most people dream of doing.
Absolutely.
And dream of doing. One of the things I wanted to talk to you, again, I really want to put the emphasis on songwriting. Where do you see yourself at now, comparing yourself being a songwriter now at this stage of the game? And we'll go back, let's say 15 years ago.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, you know. It's like, you know, you go to school, you start in kindergarten, you graduate, you get into the sixth grade, then you get into the 10th grade, and then you graduate from school, and then college comes next. I feel like I've been through every stage, and now I've graduated with a master's degree in what it's all about. I understand every aspect of it. There's nothing anybody can show me that's new. And even in the new game that we see out here today, the hustle in the streets, I mean, it's the same game, it just got a different face on it.
Right.
And so, yeah, so I feel like as a songwriter, that's my creative input is, it's graduated to the top degree. My music is so much more meaningful. There's so much more depth to it. I can write a song now that will last, stand the test of time, where when I was younger, it's all about trying to copy the trend.
Right.
What's everybody listening to? Oh, no. Got to talk about the booty. I got to talk. I don't know if I can say that. But, you know, you always trying to really got your ear to the street. You're always trying to, you know, keep up with the Joneses and see what you can write that's got that edge. Man, I don't care about none of that. Now it's about writing a real song, and I love doing that.
Right. It's kind of hard to reinvent the wheel when you've been there, done three times before, and it's like I'm in a different mindset, different lane now.
Absolutely.
What kind of bass are you playing currently? Because every time I see you, you have a different bass that you use. What is your favorite bass that you like to play now, man?
You know what? I don't have a favorite. They really? All do something different for me. Yeah.
Okay.
What is it called? The Mayonis? That's the one I want now. I was trying to get the factory to at least send me one so I could at least play around with it, try it out. Because they're really expensive, but that's gonna be my next experiment, because I like what I'm hearing coming from that bass. But man, I played Limbic, Fender, Gibsons. I mean, you name it, I played it. I got 11 basses here in my house.
Because every time I get an opportunity to see you, you tease us a little bit on social media and give us a little 5 minute into and I'm like, okay, he's teasing us with some music. I said, when is this cat getting in the studio and going to bless us with some new music? Do you think it's more prevalent now for an artist to be independent instead of being on a major label?
It really depends. If you don't have the money, the capital, you don't have throwaway disposable cash that you can throw, you know, $200,000-$300,000 into the game, you're going to struggle. You know, if you're trying to get in that mainstream, you're going to struggle. I call it the one percenters of the music industry. They're the same people doing the same thing. Very seldom do you see new people breaking through. And, because it costs so much money to do so. So I'd say if you have the money, then stay independent, you know, like Kanye. I watched how he built his career, you know, and he pumped a lot of his own money back into the game. And a lot of those artists do that, you know. But if you don't have it like that, you can't do that, and you need a record label to finance what you're doing, well, you got to play that game, you know.
Right, right.
360 deals are a beast.
You know, it's. I find it interesting, a lot of artists that I've had the pleasure of conversing with, like yourself, the ones that were at one particular moment in time that were signed to major deals and now they're independent artists, they're having a very challenging time navigating through social media and being able to promote their music. How long did it take for you to get somewhat acclimated to get out there and use social media as a vehicle to promote your music or promote anything that you're doing?
I just kept, like, it's like fishing, man. You just keep throwing a different lure in the water until something works. And I figured out how to get organic growth and organic followers. But breaking beyond, you know, like I got about, you know, 48,000, 50,000 right now. That's a small amount in comparison to some of these guys, but you can't look at it like that. You have to look at it like, heck, if you got 5,000 followers, if you could just build your following to 5,000 or 10,000, if 10,000 people pay $10 for a product that you present to them, that's $100,000 a year. See, so there's ways that you can make money as an artist without selling records. You know,
right.
It's just, if you have a fan base that likes what you do, they'll support you. My fan base is very supportive of what I do. And somebody even said something bad about me. You know, they come to bat for me. It's like a gang. You know, they attack. They'll start telling people off. So I like that. It's a protection.
It must be one special feeling to know that you have that kind of love and that kind of respect. And people, and I'm putting the emphasis on respect. Respect you as an artist. Respect you as a songwriter, and also respect you as a man. I know family has always played a very important but very private part in your life, and you've experienced so many things in your life. Can you tell the listeners and the people that are tuning in, having that kind of love and being able to have that kind of balance in your life, how has that been able to been beneficial for you over the years?
It taught me that the value of life is not the things you possess.
Right.
See, real happiness comes from your the circle you build around you, your nest. When I have two boys, and when they were born, I left the industry. See, I retired back in about 1992, three, somewhere around there. I had two sons, and I raised them. The happiest moments of my life to watch them grow. And even though, you know, there was complications, and but that's with anything. But right. In the end, now they have, I'm a grandfather. And
wow.
They're both married. Yeah, they're both successful business owners. They have their own lives. And the cool thing is they have so much love and respect for me. And that, and they're so well-rounded. That's a joy. You know, you can't ask for better than that. And that's because, you know, once you learn what is important, that's where you put all your focus. Being on the road, traveling, that comes with a whole different set of problems. And I wasn't going to introduce that to my family. I just wasn't going to do that. When I was single, it was great. But I pushed all that aside, raised my family. I went and got a real job. You know, a lot of people don't know, you know, I got a college degree. I went to school. I learned computer science, and I was hireable instantly, you know, because I had skills. And so I worked a lot of different types of jobs, especially fiber optics. I mean, that was what my heart was in. And it's amazing how, you know, I went from riding first class to coach.
Right.
but I loved it. You know, I got rid of the Ferraris, the Corvettes, all that, because I realized that it's a dead asset. It's expensive, looks good to drive, man. You know, you get a lot of accolades. But when it breaks down, okay, that's $500 just to look at it.
Right.
I started realizing I'm wasting a lot of money. And what is that going to do for my future? What I need to be doing is concentrating on the things that are important. And then when I started doing that, then my life started to just flow. It just flows now. And I wake up every morning and I'm happy. Sometimes, you know, I come out the bedroom and I'm just dancing like that little dog I be seeing on the internet, because I don't care about nothing. You know, I'm just happy. So
right.
That's all that matters.
You know, for most people, when they have that level of success and adulation, and you have so many people pulling from so many different directions, they find it very challenging just to say, you know what, I'm gonna walk away from it because I have my priorities and what's important. What's important to me right now. I'm getting a lot of questions from the chat room again. I'm going to thank everyone for tuning in and tuning out all the negativity. It's definitely a view of experiencing for wolves who are tuning in late. Shame on you, but the teddy bear does. We'll be enjoying today, of course, by the one and only Mr. Brown. Mark, I got to ask you, man, how long did it take you to get comfortable in your own skin? Because a lot of us, I say as males, the level of transparency is very challenging to reveal who we are. How long did it get to that? How long did it take you to get to that point in your life to say, I'm cool with being in the skin I'm in?
I mean, it took a long time, you know. I started in this business, you know, I was a young kid, and so I came in and right out of high school, boom, you know, I hit the test. So, yeah, I didn't have a chance to really figure out what it was all about yet, you know.
Right.
And I think that was one of the blessings I had with Prince being a mentor, is he understood I was wet behind the ears. And so he wasn't easy on me, you know. I'm going to say it right now. As big brother, and he kicked my butt. Yeah, I'm big. I'm bigger. I'm 6 feet. He was 5'2". I mean, I could have stomped on him a whole bunch of times. But you know what? I have a strong mother. I had a strong mother, and she always kept me centered. And then having a big brother like Prince, I learned to shut my mouth and listen. See, put my ego in the back seat. Let me ride this wave.
Right.
And, you know, it's like surfing. You know, I got on that wave. I didn't really know what I was doing, but he taught me how to keep it steady and keep it flowing. And once I learned that, you know, then he didn't like what he taught me. then he was just trying to step on my neck and keep me from moving. But you know what? It comes with the game, and I don't hate you for that, man. You know, it's like if I were in his shoes and I had somebody in my band, you know, that was coming up in the ranks and doing his own thing, I'd be a little, you know, I would have to have a second game plan as well, you know.
Right.
Kind of put him on a leash.
Right.
You know, say, you know, you messing up my game now. I got to hold you back a little bit.
I've taught you too much. You learned too much.
When I quit the band, you know, for all you fans who think that the revolution got, you know, disbanded, no, I quit. Okay, we were not fired. I left. And when I left, then it disbanded.
Right.
But when I made that transition and I went on my own, he tried to bring me into the MPG. You know, it was Sheila E. on drums. It was going to be me on bass, Levi, and Mika Weaver on guitar.
And Michael Bland on percussion?
No, this was before Bland was even a part of it.
Okay, okay.
And then he had, you know, of course, Dr. Fink on the keys. And I don't remember the other person, but I said no. You know, I said, Prince, I graduated from Purple University, man. I said, you helped me get this far. I said, it's time for me to step off the nest and fly, you know. And he had so much respect for me when I said that. Even though he owed me a lot of money, I wanted to ring his neck, but he still. But, you know, but that wasn't my drive. My drive was, you know, yo, time to fly. I learned all this stuff. Let me test it out. And he supported me with that. And he helped me to leave. Gave me open space at Paisley. I mean, he really gave me my own space at Paisley. That's how I got a lot of production projects, you know. So I owned my own studio down the street. I lived in Eden Prairie. He was in Chanhassen, and all of his roll-offs would come to my studio. Okay. So I had a income base even there. I mean, so he didn't just leave me hanging. So, but when I left the band, that was when I really started to figure out how this game works, you know. And man, I did not like what I saw. I really didn't. And, you know, I realized how sheltered I was being in his band. Well, the Revolution, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I realized how sheltered I was. Because the business is a beast. It's no joke.
Yeah. I remember a lot of things that he was going through on the business aspect. And like you said, you were being sheltered from that. It's like, okay, I'm out here on my own. It's like, whoa. Now I have an understanding on what he was dealing with as far as on the business aspect, as far as dealing with the labels and everything else and having control of your masters.
Yeah.
It's incredible. For the novice, the people that are tuning in and young artists who are even thinking about getting involved in this business, can you explain to them how important it is to have control over their masters?
Well, I'll give you a situation right now as an example.
Okay.
There's a group in Germany that took a song of mine without my permission. So I'm fighting for that. But guess what? I don't own the masters to the original.
Really?
So that made my task harder. See? Because I can't go back and get the original recording because the song is very different, but it's the same thing. So I have to prove that, see? And when you don't own your masters, that's a real hard thing to isolate and to prove your point. That's just one aspect. There's a lot of other things that come into play not owning your masters. And my advice to anybody is if you can stay away from a major deal and do it on your own, that's the best route, because it's best to use your own money if you can do it. But if you have to go that route, you just gotta lawyer up, get you a good lawyer behind you, and understand what you're giving up. You know, don't give it all up just because, they throwing $250,000 in my face. They say, oh, look, you can get you a new car with this, you know.
Right.
Go take your girl out. Man, don't fall for that okie doke. I mean, because that money's gonna run out so fast. That ain't no money, you know. Somebody offer you $250,000, that ain't no money. When they make it 10 times that.
Right.
You know, so own your masters, then you own the control. See? Then you got the control. When you lose the control, you're at the mercy of the label. If you're doing well for the label, then hey, they're going to keep feeding you. Like, oh, yeah, yeah. But the minute your junk start drying up, please, you're going to be a whole different ballgame.
And what I've seen over the last 2 years, I'm seeing a lot of artists who have actually sold their catalogs to the labels. And I'm like, wow, I'm kind of having a hard time wrapping my head around it, because yeah, you're selling your soul to get something, some as far as monetary in return, but the amount of money that the label can make off owning the catalog
is astronomical.
It's just incredible, from using it to commercials, to television, to movies, for anything. And I'm thinking, I said, what is the mindset of an artist at that time that they will be willing to sell off their entire catalog like that?
Well, I did it once, you know. I got it all back, you know. My deal is over, and so I got it back, you know. At the end of my deal, it came back to me. But I remember it was the money. Is you know, when somebody throws that kind of cash in your face, you're like, ooh, I can invest this. You feel like you're on top of the world. When you get my age, you learn the difference between being rich and being wealthy.
Oh, yeah.
See? You know, I was rich, but never wealthy. See?
Mm-hmm.
And once you realize the difference, it's like, woo, got to own your stuff. And I'll give you an example. I'm not going to say the product, but I did a song for a major company.
Okay.
I was seeing checks at $45,000 a month. And that was just one project. And them checks would be sitting up on my fireplace. I forgot that I even had them. You know, my friends would be coming over. They'd be like, did you know you got a check up here? I'd be like, I do. Oh, man, get that here. Let me, you know, nowadays you can just take a picture of it and deposit it. But back then, you just have to drive to the bank, you know. But them checks was coming in so regular. That's the beauty of owning your own stuff. The minute I sold my catalog, that stopped. Checks were going to them. You know, I still made good money, but now I'm splitting 50-50.
Right.
Where before I had the whole thing, and that was looking juicy. Brother was eating porterhouse and, you know, ribeyes every night. I mean, I was doing, you know, that was nice.
Oh, man. You know what's so interesting? I thought when you left, I thought you were going to make that transition like Danny Elfman did when he left Oingo Boingo and started doing a lot of movie soundtracks. And I thought that was going to be your next progression. Do you have any interest as far as doing soundtracks for movies?
you know, oh man, that's such a discussion. Just to put it simple, man, that's it's all about who you know.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know a lot of cats doing sync licensing and stuff right now. Even that's hard to get into, but, you know, it's easier than it was back in the day. But that business is so locked up, just like when I was doing commercials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pepsi, I did cereal commercials. I mean, these jingle houses got this stuff so locked up. And unfortunately, there's just a lot of, you know, racial inequities there, you know. There just is. And, but I would love to get into that. I definitely know everything about it. I mean, I know how to, but every time I tried, it's just, I hit stone walls. Just stone walls, and I can't figure out why.
Right.
I can write, I mean, I can write orchestrated. I got on YouTube, I got a video I did. It's called A Kingdom of Melody. It's just showing a different side of me. And you listen to that, you can see I can do it. I can score, you know. But it's like, how do you get somebody to give you that shot? You know, that's a hard thing to do. It ain't as easy as people think it is.
I've heard that several times. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that people have about you that they don't really truly know?
About me?
Yeah.
Oh, man. A lot of people think I can't sing. They think I just play bass. That's not true. A lot of people think that all I know how to do is be a backup musician. Not true. I've managed more bands than Maserati. I've done a lot of things people don't know. I've been the guy behind the scenes. But I think the biggest misconception that I think people have about me is that I give a care about this industry. Cause I could care less. You know, I mean, it's like, it's fun as long as it's fun. But when it's not fun for me anymore, I'm out.
Yeah.
I don't need it. I don't need to do it. I don't have to, you know? So yeah, as far as any other misconceptions, I don't really, I haven't heard too many things, but I'm pretty sure if anybody's got some out there, I'll give them a correction right now. let them ask the question. You know, I'm one thing about me, I'm very verbal. I mean, I'm very black and white. I tell it like it is. I don't have hair on my tongue.
There you go. And that's a beautiful thing, man. The book inside the, my goodness, the book that you had written about your time being with Prince. I've had an opportunity on several occasions to read the book from beginning to end, and you revealed a lot of stuff. You experienced a lot of different things, the ebbs and flows of being around someone that is so demanding, but I also took from it that you learned so much from him, and that level of respect that you had for one another, it shines through that book. And I'll go as far as the love that you have for one another. It completely comes through in that book. And I wanted to ask you, it's hard for me because you and I, we're about the same age. And
well, I'm only 30, man. Come on. Don't put me in that category.
Hey, you know what? We're both 21, man. We both 21. And man, man, to see, and I'll be the first to admit, man, when Andre left and you replaced him, I said, wait a minute, who's this cat? And to see you perform, man, you completely blew me away. And I must admit, it hurt my heart when you left. It hurt my heart. It did, man. It really. it wasn't the same. And I know you had an opportunity on several occasions to kind of look back and reflect. If you had an opportunity to have a conversation with Prince, what would be some of the things that you guys would talk about? Some of the things that you would bring to his attention, or some of the things that you would like to know or tell him, express to him?
You know, the funny thing is, he and I talk more than anybody realizes. You know, me and Prince share the same religion. And only I was introduced to it years before he was.
Okay.
But that commonality is what made he and I remain sane with each other. Because there were things that he did to me that the person I was 35 years ago, I mean, I would have wrang his neck, you know what I mean? You know, he did me wrong. He did me wrong in so many ways, but you don't ever hear me talk too much about it, because who cares? It's over now, you know? I'm a happy man, you know? I'm living my life. But before he died, we were in lots of conversations. And one of the conversations that I was going to have with him, and I was just waiting, and I know he was waiting for me to be finished waiting. he knew it was coming. Kiss.
Yeah.
Kiss was one of the biggest hits ever from his, you know, catalog ever to be released. One of the biggest. I'm a 50-50 writer on that. That's my music. I wrote that, and he totally undercut me. And I was going to confront him about it, and I was just going to say, yo, man, so we friendly now and stuff. Why don't you get friendly with that bank account? You know, and you know the deal. You know what's right. up. And because that's just how I talk to him. You know, I'm not afraid. I'm not a butt kisser. I mean, it's like, you know, and he knew that about me. So we could do this.
Right.
And I was in Paisley Park. He had flown me. I was living in California. He flew me out. And several occasions I could tell he wanted to put me in one of his bands or ask me that I want to play. And he would fly me out and we would jam up in Paisley. You know, that's when John Blackwell was around, and you know, we had some fun. So I was able to get a lot off my chest with him about our past. Even Maserati, there's a lot of stuff nobody knows.
Right.
So we were able to clear the air and let bygones be bygones. The past is the past. But the one thing was Kiss. He knew it was coming. And I was waiting. He formed Third Eye Girl, and I was just waiting for the next opportunity, because I knew once he got settled, he was going to call me to Paisley again, because this was very frequent. Or he would call me 3-4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and he would be in that rambling mood. And he'd just start talking. And I was just going to tell him. I was just going to flat and lay it out. And say, yo, man, you got to make that right. You know, we can't forget about that.
Right.
And then he passed away, man. It broke my heart, you know. Not that I didn't get to talk to him, but that we were finally, for the first time since we were young, two men. We're men now.
Right.
And we were conversing with each other as men. See, it wasn't no, you know, oh, you know, I'm bigger than you are, you know. My jock strap's bigger than yours, you know. It was none of that kind of stuff. It was like two men and with nothing but the utmost of respect for each other. And when you can talk on that level, man, things get done, you know. A lot of closure happens. And I had to go, you know, I needed therapy when I quit the Revolution, you know, and to come full circle like that and actually reconnect with him on that level to where we actually became friends. that was the best thing in the world for me. See, that trumped all the stuff that I had that I was angry about. It trumped it all. And then when he passed away, it was like, oh wow, I can't talk to him anymore. I can't have these conversations, you know. So yeah, that was hard.
It's a huge difference when you make that transition from being a mentor to being brothers.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, wait a minute, we're on the same level. He's not treating me like, he's not a mentor anymore to me. We're brothers. We can sit down and have a conversation.
Exactly.
Like two grown men now. And if I'm not, please educate, because if I'm not mistaken, as far as Kiss was originally slated to go on Maserati's album, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it was. And you know, I heard somebody make a comment. It really, really pissed me off. Somebody made a comment that, no, Prince wrote that already, and he put it on a cassette and gave it to Dave Z or gave it something. That's some bull, okay? I'm gonna tell you right now, that's some bull. You know, Prince had an open communication with me. He didn't have to give something to me in some roundabout way.
Right.
He came to me with a cassette and handed that to me, and it was him playing the acoustic guitar. You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on. That's what he was doing.
Right.
And that's how he would write. And I was like, okay, I'm feeling it. I see what you're saying. He said, man, we need to do that on Maserati. I was like, no, man, that's some Bob Dylan stuff. I said, I don't want none of that on my record. What are you talking about? He said, no, man, just put your thing on it. And, you know, he said, something like this is going to set him off. So I went into the studio, Sunset Sound. You know, you're going to hear a lot of different stories, but I'm going to tell you right now, they all lie.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the only one that got the truth on this story. And, but, you know, I started out, I played a DX drum. I used to program my drums on a DX because I didn't want to sound like Prince with the Linn 9000.
Okay.
Or the original Linn, the LM1. I didn't want that sound. I wanted it to be different. So Kiss was done on a DX, a DX1, I believe it was called, you know. And, you know, I started it out with this, just the drum beat, just boom, boom, boom. I was like, you know, because I'm thinking club. I'm like, okay, what? Okay. And then I got the beat, and then I said, let me put the bass on it. I said, I got my feel now. Terry, get in here. Don't have to be beautiful. And it started to feel good. Started adding all the little log drums, all the little different bell sounds, bells and whistles. Prince walks into the studio. Oh, David Z, he did an excellent job with Maserati with the background vocals. He's a good vocal producer, and he brought those guys in and put that little church thing on it. You know, you know, that
right.
Whole thing that they would do. I don't have to be rich, little room, my world. That whole, the way the harmonies, you know, it was incredible. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be the bomb. Man, this dude walks into the studio, and when Prince gets that smirk, and everybody knows the smirk I'm talking about, he gets that devilish smirk on his face, and then he starts laughing. I was like, oh, this ain't good. And he's like, where are you going, Mark? I said, we going to go get some dinner, come back, and, you know, finish up. You should let me work on it a little bit. I said, what do you mean work on it? You don't need no work, you know? And he said, no, I just want to tweak it. I'll put some stuff on. Man, that was the biggest mistake. I came back about 2 hours later. He comes walking in the studio. He's looking around. And he said, I'm like, what's up, man? He said, I want you to hear something. I said, oh, man. I said, here we go. So he said, don't let the other guys come. Just you. So we walk over to Studio A, Sunset Sound. wiggling, and I was like, oh. He done took the song, you know, had that. I said, dude, I said, what did you do? You did that in 2 hours.
Yeah.
We literally went to dinner. He came back. He had his whole vibe on that song. And he said, and then he stopped the tape and he's like, you know, this would be better on us. Said just like I sound like some Dave Chappelle right now. You know, this would be better. And I was like, I looked at him, I said, us? I mean, are you saying that I'm gonna get some, you know, this is 50-50. I got some writing on this, right? He said, yeah, man, the revolution. He said, you know, this is gonna be a big hit. He said, you know, this song ain't gonna do that well with them. It's gonna be better on us. I'm just thinking, seeing dollar signs. I'm seeing retirement, you know.
Right.
And so I'm like, I said, let's do it. He said, okay, good. So you go tell him. I was like, oh, you mother. How you going to tell me? I got to go tell him. Because they was all pissed off. They were all mad. But anyway, that's how that song was birthed. I mean, that's where it came from. And, one of his biggest hits, and I really, really wanted to have a chat with him on that one.
I can only imagine what that song would have sounded like on that Maserati album, because that Maserati album from 100 miles an hour, Player's Ball. Oh my! Yeah.
That was a bad album. Hey, did you hear? You know, Questlove has the original Maserati version of his. Have you ever heard it?
No, I haven't.
Man, hit Quest up, man.
Okay.
he got that jump, man. He plays it when he's spinning.
Okay.
And he'll play it. Before he plays the original Prince version, he plays the Maserati version. And I know when people hear it, they're shocked. They're like, wait a second. Oh, they stole that from Prince. No, it's the opposite way around. The opposite way around, you know.
Man, how did you get them cast together on Maserati from Craig Screaming Powell to Sir Casey? I mean, man, that was that group, yeah. Man, was wild, man. Wild, full of energy.
It was my boys, man. I miss them. We started out in my bedroom.
Okay.
At my house, because, you know, my mom wasn't playing. I was still living at home. And me and Terry, we used to run together in high school. So,
okay.
You know, we only been out of school like 1.5 years or something like that. I knew he could sing a little bit. And so he's the first one I went and got. And, you know, I said, man, we should do this band. And you be the lead singer. He looked at me like, what? You know, he didn't grow up thinking he was ever going to be a singer in a band. You know, it just wasn't what he was looking at for his life. And I talked him into it, and I got him to do it. And he said, you got to show me the ropes, man. I showed him the ropes. I showed him everything I was being taught. That's why Terry was such a bad boy, man. It's like he was getting it from me, but I was getting it from Prince. He was basically getting firsthand education on how to be a rock star, you know. And man, when Terry used to walk out on that stage, I mean, he really took it and enveloped it. I mean, he had this power about him where he controlled his stage. You know, I love that about him. And then Screamer was playing in this other band. He's from, I think, Rock Island, the tri-state area over there, Illinois. So I found him and, you know, he kind of had the look, because I knew what I was going for. I want this AC/DC Guns N' Roses meets cameo, you know.
Right.
I knew what I wanted, you know. Yeah. And so Screamer worked, and then I said, we got to have a white drummer. He got to be white. We got to have a long hair. You know, we got Kale. Kale used to hit them drums so hard, man, he just go through skin. And I was like, okay, we got the whole thing. It's coming together. Then we found Aaron, the keyboard player. That big old hair.
Yeah.
The way he would dance, I was like, Aaron's the bomb. It's like, you know, a lot of people would complain. They would say, man, you know, but Aaron don't play as good as some of, you know. I said, who cares? I said, this boy can play and dance. I said, that's all I need. Are you kidding me? And then Tony Christian was walking down the street. I knew I needed a guitar player, and I also needed somebody when I wasn't around that could give these guys a reminder of what their image is.
Right.
I saw this dude. I was driving down the street, and I saw him. I did a U-turn. Came back around and said, yo, man, I said, you play music? He said, yeah, man, you know, I play a little bit. I was like, man, you want to be in a band? He was like, yeah, man, you know, I play bass, I do this and that. So anyways, long story short, that's how we got Christian. He lived in Milwaukee. So I let him stay at my house.
Okay.
So, you know, my house was the hotel. I had Giorgio Alatini up in there. You know, Chico DeBarge. I mean, my house was like the hotel.
Right.
And, but, you know, we put that junk together, and I'll never forget the first show. People didn't even know what to do. They just looked, they stared. And I hid it from Prince for three years. Playing, you know, I knew they weren't ready. I said, you guys got to play clubs. You have to. You can't just go out there and be a star. You got to learn what it's all about.
Right.
And so we got them a booking agency, and then they started playing around, the states around Minnesota. And Prince got wind to it. Prince heard about him. You could not hear about him. I mean, they were so upcoming. They were like the rivals of the time.
Right.
The time was, you know, too hot to be cool. Well, they were, you know, their line was, no, the time was, I'm cool. Maserati was, I'm too hot to be cool.
Yeah.
So they were rivals, and we set it up that way because we wanted, even though they were very different bands, that was my way to let people know this is something to pay attention to. And he found out about it, flew me out to L.A., picked me up at the airport. He don't do that. Prince don't pick nobody up at the airport. What? He picked me up. I said, oh, no. I was like, what is going on? And we were driving, and he said, Mark, I know you got a band. I was like, how did you find out, man? He said, man, you know. It was gonna be a matter of time. You know, he said, Who's the shadow? He said, I knew that was you. I could tell by the sound. And then anyway, long story short, you know, he said, you know, we brothers need to stick together and all. He gave me the spiel, and I was like, okay, man, okay. I'll sign him the Paisley. You know, I signed him the Paisley because, you know, he pressured me.
That I remember it like it was yesterday, because when I first seen the first video, and I said, you know what, I got to go down to the record store. I know I'm dating myself a little bit, but that's all right. I had to go down to the record store and buy that album, and I still have that album to this day. And man, like I said, the entire album from a sonic concept is incredible.
Thank you.
Man, and that's why I said, so when I get him on the show, I just wanted to let him know, first and foremost, man, you did a masterful job on the production of that album. The album cover is something, man, I would expect something like that. The whole album cover was wild. I love that. I love that, man.
We are all things to all people. That's right. What that album cover was about. I don't care if you're blue, purple, black, white, it didn't matter. You know, long blonde hair or dark, you know, it didn't matter. You know, fire is in the eyes. We coming at you. And that's what that whole album cover was about.
Man, it was beautiful.
People didn't realize it back then, but, you know, everything that I did was conceptual, you know, so I would come up with concepts and I would build on them. So...
Well, just to let you know, man, we have so many people in the chat room, and a lot of the bands are saying they want some new music. They want you to put out some new music, man. I said, hey, man.
I know.
They want some new music. They definitely
it's
want
coming.
Some new music. It's coming.
It's coming.
Man,
2023, I already been working on a lot of different stuff. It's really cool. I just want it to be right, though. You know, I don't care about if it's a hit or not, but I want the music to be banging. And right. The other thing is, you know, I know a lot of people are waiting for me to come out with this this online bass course.
Right.
And, you know, I just want to let the fans know what happened is, you know, there's developers, there's people involved in doing that stuff. And with what I was going to develop, this interactive bass course was bigger than just the bass course. I mean, what I'm doing with this is I'm letting people get a taste of A-list. I don't care if you coming in way down here, you gonna get the interaction that I got when I got to play with Prince. You're gonna have that. You're gonna have access to all the big stars that play. And the way I have it set up is so cool. I can't give too much of it away, but I don't have control of the development time, and that's the problem. And so I'm a little frustrated, but I got to be patient. But when it comes out, it's gonna be dope.
Man, but we're waiting on that, and I just wanted to let you know, man. Again, it was an honor to have you on the show. I've been waiting a long time, and when I had an opportunity to see you guys collectively perform in Syracuse at the Carrier Dome, to this day, I have never seen a concert like that to equal match. It was something magical. It's, you see something when where people are really quick to say a once in a lifetime event. I can honestly say for me personally, that was a once in a lifetime experience. Something like that can never be replaced. It can never be duplicated ever again, man. It really can. I just want to tell you how much I love you, how much I respect you. And man, whatever you need, please do not hesitate to let me know, man. When the music is ready, like grandma's cookies, and he's still in love, a little soft cinnamon here, man.
Man, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you.
No problem. Be sure to catch up with Mark on all of his social media websites, on Instagram, also on Facebook, on Twitter. Make sure you go there, support him, get all the latest updates, and hopefully soon we'll get an opportunity to see this brother perform live wherever it is, man. He said, well, Teddy, but how are we gonna get there? Trains, planes, automobiles, Camel. You have to get on the Camel. Yeah. Make sure you have it, man. God bless you, man, and much continued success and love to you.
Wow, thank you, man. Thank you.
God bless. The legendary Brown Mark here in the zone of Night Tracks Radio. My goodness. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and watching the broadcast live, and even people in the chat room, thank you so much for joining us again. Be sure that you follow, subscribe, whatever you need to do to get all the latest updates on what Brown Mark is doing on his social media website, on Instagram.com/BrownMarkOfficial. And if I'm not mistaken, the same handle on Facebook, but it's Brown Mark Fan, Brown Mark Official Fan, I believe. It's on there. But I want to thank everyone for tuning in and supporting the show. It's definitely been a beautiful experience. And as always, keep it soulful here on Night Tracks Radio.